Well, I wonder what this one's going to be about. Welcome, everyone, to the roundtable. Julia Marcus with you in a secret location, shall we say, somewhere on the island that is this country, because, dare I say, this episode is going to be noteworthy. Matt McQuaid is with me. Matty, what do you want to talk about this week?
I have no idea what you're talking about, Julian. Absolutely nothing happened. It was the FIBA break, remember? Nothing of any consequence happened in the National Basketball League. So you tell me, and I'll be happy to follow. Of course, I'm kidding. And, yes, a little bit of sarcasm there. There is a lot to talk about, and a lot about where this league is, about ethics and morals and protecting their players and all that kind of stuff. And we need to get into it, because obviously what we're talking about is what came down the pike today, which was the outcome of the single person tribunal in which Montrezl Harrell of the Adelaide 36ers was suspended for 3 games and received nearly $4,000 worth of fines. And Kendrick Davis, also of the Adelaide 36ers, was suspended for 2 games based on a charge of, quote, inappropriate grabbing or handling of a spectator. So there's been a lot, obviously, in social media that's gone on, and a lot of very, very fired up and, quite frankly, pissed off people right now about the league, about how this tribunal process ran and the outcome of it. So, yeah, look, let's get into it.
We'll start with the process itself. And the first point of contention for me is that it was closed to all media, which goes against what we have usually seen in these scenarios. That was the first sort of
flag. That was strange. And let me just, before we go on, just let me talk to that a bit, because I've got a bit of history with that. So when Josh Childress was with the Sydney Kings, and everybody remembers that incident with Jesse Wagstaff, and the outcome of that, the actual tribunal I was a part of, at the time I was working as a Kings media and communications manager. And so it was my responsibility to basically manage the media aspect. The media was invited to the actual tribunal, not so much the actual room itself, but outside, so that they could ask questions immediately. And there were quite a few there. From memory, I think Channel 9 was there with a camera as well. So that was, I guess, it wasn't to do with a fan, obviously, but it was very high profile at the time. You remember, I had Josh going around to all sorts of media outlets at the time. I remember most memorably going out to Fox Sports studios at Artarmon and talking about the whole situation and what had happened. And then obviously the racial abuse he copped online because of what happened. So that I can tell you, that's why it was kind of very, very unusual for them to completely leave the media out of it. Was an eye opener for me, having been a part of it. Now, this is in the pre Larry Kestelman era, so it was managed differently, obviously. Different parties were running the league at the time. I was actually part of that situation with Josh, and being in the media being the media manager of the Sydney Kings at that time. So this is where I was very stunned that they actually went down this path, the NBL.
I just don't understand what the positives are by going down this road with that process.
Yeah.
Because immediately you have the questions of transparency.
Transparency, yeah, 100%.
We're already talking about a situation. Let's bring the elephant into the room and invite him to dance. The whole scenario has been around this happening with Melbourne United. And the perception around the fan base and around the competition, rightly or wrongly, that there's one rule for United and another rule for everybody else. And that has really come to a head throughout this entire process. I would love to hear an explanation why.
Yeah.
Just tell us why.
You won't. Because
we're not going to hear it, of course.
No. And this is the thing, right? Larry Kestelman, and we'll get on to him, and I'll talk about him at length in a minute. He's not the majority owner of Melbourne United anymore, but he does have a part of it. So That's number one. He also has a part of the Tasmania Jack Jumpers. So it's important to remember that as well. But
Brisbane?
Brisbane, I think he's got a part of it as well. So he's been trying to sell it, obviously. He sold the majority of it to that consortium. But again, as you say, transparency is one thing. The other thing is this, what appears to most people to be an obvious, massive conflict of interest. And it leaves the league open to accusations of impropriety in that they're not, how do I word this, considered by the fan base, a majority of the fan base, certainly not Melbourne fans, but a lot of the fan base, they're not considered to be fair and impartial as a league while these obvious conflict of interests are happening. Now, again, whether that's true or not, it's the perception, and perception sometimes is what is it, 90% reality, as they say, or whatever the percentage is. But that's the issue the league's got. Now, the league obviously has been going great guns in the last few years, and the majority of that is down to Larry and his input and his money. And you know, I've always said what Frank Lowy did for the A-League is what Larry Kestelman, when the A-League was actually up there, maybe not so much now, but at the time, let's not even say the A-League, let's say Australian soccer full stop. This is what Larry Kestelman did for really not just the NBL, but for Australian basketball full stop. And I said for years before he came on board, and the NBL was dead, was just about dead and buried before he bought it. So again, I want to absolutely be crystal clear on this. He is to be absolutely applauded for what he's done in saving Australian basketball, quite frankly. He did. So, and I've got enormous time for him for doing that, because I've always said for years and years and years that we needed that guy, and we got him, and we are so fortunate for it, as people like me who absolutely adore the sport. So, but again, you get back to now he's running the league. He's got a piece of some other teams, in particular Melbourne, which he bought after he sold Dodo for about $200+ million, whatever it was, back in the day. So whether he likes it or not, he is connected to that club. And when this happened, and again, the lack of transparency, not having the media around, people just look at the league and they don't respect it. And I hate that, you know. And maybe people will say we're going a bit overboard, but I don't think so. Based on what I've seen on social media, it's been just, you know, they're not reading the room, the NBL. Larry's not reading the room here. And, you know, and we'll get into one thing in particular I think is absolutely disgusting. And that is the whole business around what was said, again, allegedly to Kendrick Davis. But it's kind of like, well, they pushed it aside. They haven't even, oh, it wasn't heard by any United staff, therefore it didn't happen. I mean, can you give me an absolute break? That is an absolute disgrace. And it's, again, they're not reading the room.
So the punishments, as you mentioned at the top, Montrezl Harrell, 3-game suspension. You receive fines totaling $3,685. Kendrick Davis, a 2-game suspension, and this is for the charge of inappropriate grabbing or handling of a spectator. The Harrell charges are one for striking, which he received a fine, or two charges, sorry, a charge of engaging in a melee, and a charge of inappropriate grabbing or handling of a spectator. Now, we still have not heard what the punishments are for the spectators
Spectator.
that were involved. And I use spectators because
There
you've
were
written.
four of them who got kicked out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's four of them involved. The fact that we still have not heard that and this punishment was announced first, it just feels to me watching this all play out, and I've been out of the fishbowl for a couple of weeks out of Melbourne, you know, doing other things. It does seem to me that it just, for lack of a better phrase, you're looking at controlling the messaging. It's just been a series of unforced errors to me. You should have gone with the fan punishment announcement first. Why media were closed off from this process, I would love an explanation because to me, what's the benefit? What's the benefit of that? It's been a mess.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, I will say one thing to be fair, and those who saw the News Corp papers today, the cross court section, which is an entire page on the league, which is great. Our good friends Matt Logan, Michael Randall put that together. There is the question put to Larry about the punishment and what Matt and Michael have written. It's unknown what punishment the fans in question will receive for their role in the altercation, but Kestelman's stance on poor behaviour, it's simple. It's a privilege to sit courtside and it's a privilege to be that close to athletes, so that privilege needs to be respected, Kestelman told Cross Court. Not many sports afford you the privilege to be that close. For as long as I'm around, it, the NBL, will continue to be a family-first product. So I guess he's saying the right things in that instance. And again, to be fair, it's probably going to be an easy situation when you know who the players are. I think that's part of the, you know who the players are, you know that side of it. What you don't know, with one exception, and because it's been, the name's been, one of the spectators involved, the name was made public. But the other three, and I think one of them is Hoodie Dude, they still haven't been able to determine who it is. But so I guess that's the next, I can understand why that punishment comes or that whatever happens, and we don't know if anything's going to happen, to those fans slash spectators, because they've still got to determine who they were. That's my read on that, with the exception of one guy. That's my read in the situation, as far as the fans are concerned.
With a statement of when we find out who this guy is, he will be banned for life from our games. Would that have gone away to quelling things, or does that prejudice the whole process?
Prejudice, you can't say that unless you've actually got knowledge of who it is, right? You could potentially word a statement without being specific about a ban, right? As in, we're gonna, be uncompromising in what we see to be antisocial behavior that has no place at a National Basketball League game, where the fans have clearly crossed the line. But what, unfortunately, again, when you go back to that word perception, it looks to me like it just comes across as Montrez and Kendrick are the ones that instigated the whole thing, which, quite frankly, is complete and utter bullshit. And I don't often swear on this program, but I think it needs to be said. It's crap. And again, I just think your players are your main constituents. For them to come out, for the league to come out and say, well, we didn't hear, there's no evidence it was said. It's so instructive. And I said this last week. It's so instructive when you look at when that melee started with the fans and the Adelaide players and Matty Weston and Nick Popovich was involved in trying to, keep peace between the two warring parties, as it were. But the way Kendrick Davis reacted, my first thought was bang, someone said racial, something racial to him. I mean, to me, it insults your intelligence to say, nobody from United heard it, therefore it didn't happen. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. And it looks like they've put the onus on the players rather than the fans themselves, who were obviously, look, not obviously, but I would think there was alcohol involved. I think part of it was also the atmosphere, and it had been whipped up into a frenzy with the whole situation that we've already been through. It's a Melbourne Adelaide game. There's always heightened tensions. And look, the temperature was high, and this is the outcome of it now. And there were things said by the fans. And look, did Montrez react well to what was allegedly said to him? No. But quite frankly, Kendrick and obviously Montrez would have heard it as well. What was again, and I stress to emphasize, allegedly said to him is an absolute disgrace. And for that reason alone, the NBL should have taken, I just do not understand why the NBL just didn't take him at his word. I really don't. But here we are.
To read this United statement that they put out on this matter. Now, this was put out on November the 22nd. This was the second statement they put out on this whole situation. Quote, Melbourne United is aware of speculation regarding racially based, derogatory, or offensive language allegedly used by spectators during last week's game against the Adelaide 36ers. Throughout our own investigation and collaboration with the NBL investigation, club has not been made aware that any such comments have been able to be substantiated or corroborated.
Come on. Again, that's just really poor from them. Look, I'm really gobsmacked at that because you look, why does Davis respond like that? I mean, look, there's trash talk and there's trash talk, right? And if it gets to a racial derogatory, super derogatory, putting him down, but particularly, in the words that were used, that's how he's going to respond. I mean, I've seen this before. And of course you're going to respond like that. So yeah, again, and then the ultimate hypocrisy from the league, and this is what drives me nuts. They're giving this guy, Montrezl Harrell, a 3-game suspension. And yet, on the other hand, they're promoting to put, to promote the league using, social media and what happened as a way to kind of, oh, look at, this is a fiery league. It's exciting. It's this, it's that. It's like, well, you can't have it both ways. On the one hand, you've basically thrown this guy under the bus. On the other hand, you're happy to use his notoriety as a former NBA Sixth Man of the Year, as a guy who, brings people through the door, unquestionably, is it one of the big reasons why Adelaide's been selling out the way they have. And then on the other hand, you want to pump it up, but then you want to censure him in, what I think is a completely over the top way. Yeah, did he deserve a suspension? He probably did. He did, but not for the fans thing. This is what I've got a problem with. With the fans thing. He gets a 3-game suspension for that. So, yeah, I, yeah, it just smells to high heaven, the whole thing. It's just been poorly managed, poorly run. The process itself, not having media there, and just look, they're going to toe the company line at NBL HQ. Were suspensions warranted? For the fan, there's two sides to every story. And I think it's important to note that I'm sure that Adelaide will use every recourse to appeal the decision. And let's see what happens from there. But again, in a single member tribunal is another one, which is really, really strange to me.
And the fact that Adelaide have the right to appeal to a full member tribunal. So why not go to the full member
Why not
tribunal?
do that from the first place? Yeah, 100%. I just hate to see all this, Julian. I mean, we should be all about the league and the competition, which is phenomenal, and the great things that the league has done over the last, what is it now, 7 or 8 years since Larry took over. But unfortunately, the league, and look, this isn't a new phenomenon, but the league has had a propensity to shoot itself in the foot on matters like this. And again, we go back to the original premise of this, and that is it's the lack of transparency and a conflict of interest. And it's got to be fixed somehow. I don't know how, but whether Larry completely divests himself of all, and that's easier said than done, I understand, but divests himself of all interest in any of the teams, to completely and completely separate the league from the teams.
Can the league and those teams afford that though?
Yeah, it's just a bad look all around, isn't it?
And then I follow that up with the response from Montrezl Harrell on social media on Monday night,
Yeah.
quoting him, "No one else involved in the situation, huh? At NBL, only me and KD, LOL. No players from other team, just the coach for
Yeah.
coming off the bench, lol. Yeah, I'm good, man. Shake my head."
Yeah. Yeah.
Are we going to see him back?
Yeah, well, he brought that up on social media, didn't he? That there was this implication that he wouldn't be back. It's 3 games. It's a significant punishment. especially for a player that's really done a lot for the league in a short period of time here. And look, I'm not, I want to hasten to add, as far as he's concerned, I'm not fully exonerating him by any stretch.
No.
But because he, and I said this last week, I mean, he has had that little Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde complex, where on the one hand, when things are up and going, he's high-fiving the fans and the kids love him and the Adelaide fans go crazy for him and everything's happy and it's great. But when things aren't going so well, he does tend to, go to a different level, a different kind of energy, if you like, and which isn't good. So I'm not exonerating him from this. I'm agreeing with him 100% to say that these are the only two guys that are getting punishment for this of the suspension variety. Come on. Ridiculous. You just shake your head. It's just stuff that shouldn't happen, stuff that should have already been dealt with. The league is always talking about being more like the NBA. Well, act like it, guys. Be more professional. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things they need to do to get a lot better as a league. They carry on about we're the second best league in the world. Well, no, you're not. And the second best league in the world wouldn't be doing things of this nature. Again, it's just, and then look, people have had a go. Look, the AFL as an example is an absolute juggernaut, and people for years and years have had goes at them for the way they've handled certain things, like the Adam Goods situation as a notable example. So they're not alone in being a sporting organization that sometimes gets things wrong. But I guess as people who love the sport and love the league, we can see that there are ways to make things better that just aren't being made better for a variety of reasons right now. And I think that's probably the thing that makes you angry or the thing that makes you shake your head.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. There's much less room for error for a sport like the NBL, a
Yeah.
competition like the NBL, than the AFL. The
Oh,
AFL's
I'd agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you on that
they're
one.
sitting on a money pit. I mean, they would need about
Yeah.
700 different bad decisions to see an
Yeah.
impact on the bottom line. And if you
They're
want
a
to,
juggernaut. Yeah.
if you
Yeah.
want a
They're the
recent
juggernaut.
real-world example, look at the A-League.
Yeah.
You
Yeah.
mentioned 10 years ago, they were flying high.
Yeah, the whole
Decisions
Winegrass
made
thing.
by, yeah, decisions made by their governing body and the
Yeah.
powers that be, it disenfranchised fans and they're still everyone.
Yeah. I'm not saying we're at that stage. I think we are better run overall than that. But I take your point because we're not, we're never going to be the AFL. We're never going to be the NRL. What we want to be is the strongest niche sport, quote niche sport around. We can puff our chests out and say how great we are. And I've often said, I've always wanted Australian basketball to be that way because we are a powerhouse. We're a powerhouse in this region in Asia where, now we're a powerhouse globally. So we should be. But again, part of that is you've got to have the correct governance and the right governance at the top. And while I think for the most part it's been good, I think things like this tell you that there's still a hell of a lot of work to do.
Looking at the suspensions in a vacuum, but completely leave everything else out of it. Montrezl Harrell, 3 games. Kendrick Davis, 2 games. Too high, too low, just right.
Well, I think, I can't remember, I read this somewhere, but 5 games for that sort of quote, inappropriate grabbing or dealing with a spectator. So I should mention, it's only ever happened once in NBL history that a player has been suspended for what Montrez and Kendrick are alleged to have done. Well, alleged, it's been, according to the single member tribunal, it's been proven that they've done it. And that is, grabbing, being physical with a spectator. So 1999 at what was then called the Sydney Superdome, Ben Melmoth was playing for the Sydney Kings and went into the crowd to go after a guy who'd been trash talking in the Kings that year were that season were pretty terrible. One of the fans was trash talking Melmoth from the stand close to where the bench was, and Melmoth went after him, grabbed him by the throat, and was choking him out. The Kings trainer David Driscoll at the time also went into the crowd. So Melmoth got 6 games for that, and Driscoll got 2 games for being involved in it. So it has happened before. So it's half of what that is, what that was rather. So I guess, you know, they whether or not they even remembered it, probably not, but because it was the only time it's ever happened in NBL history. So the 3 games based off that, you'd probably say, okay. But I still don't, I don't buy it because I, again, you know, it just seems too one-sided to me because, as you mentioned, we haven't heard about the whole side of the fans. And, you know, the Davis thing I think is even worse because the 2 games, look, if you grab the guy, that's one thing. But the reason, you got to think about the flip side of it, what he heard. And clearly what he heard was racial. I'm sorry. No one's going to tell me any different that that happened. I saw the guy's reaction. You know, I mean, to me, it's just a little bit of insulting our intelligence by saying, oh, no, you know, no one heard it said. So why did he absolutely lose his, you know what? It's, yeah, it's just, please. It happened. Look, just, yeah. But I think that's the issue I've got with it is because we don't know what punishment is going to be handed out to those 4 spectators. And we need to know pretty quickly, you know, if they can figure out who these people, I'm surely to goodness, they can find that information out if they looked hard enough.
What is this going to do for Adelaide season, do you believe, after all of this destruction?
Well, we don't know. Like, obviously, there is an appeals process. So it's. Yep. I think we have to wait until that runs its course. But if it stands, then, yeah, look, I hope he returns, number one. I think he's been great for the league. I mean, look, it's not every day you get a former Sixth Man of the Year in the NBA and who's clearly talented. Yes, he loses his cool, and yes, he's got that reputation for being fiery, but I still think, you know, the good outweighs the bad with him. Kendrick Davis has been fantastic for them. I think he's been one of the best point guards in the league. And I don't agree with Derek Rucker putting him so low in the sorry, Ruck, you know I love you, but I don't agree with him putting him so low in his top 15. I mean, correct that he was in the 15, but he should have been a lot higher. Anyway, that's by the by. I think that one hurts probably even more than what Harrell does. But yeah, look, it's a speed bump. We just hope they come back and look, it might really pump them up and get them super motivated for the stretch run, and Adelaide's going to become even more dangerous. So, yeah, hopefully not too much. Obviously, in the short-term pain with hopefully a bit of long-term gain.
The games that Davis will miss, and Harrell as well, this weekend against the Tasmania Jack Jumpers at home, and then the second game that Davis would miss is Friday next week against Brisbane in Brisbane. And then on top of that, Montrez will miss the December 8th game at home against Perth. Mm. So Tasmania and Brisbane, Tasmania at home, Brisbane on the road. If you are going to lose 2 guys of that quality, in particular Davis, because you're getting back for the Perth game,
yeah,
not the worst time to lose them.
100%. Yep. It's a really good point. So, you know, but again, then we sort of start thinking about what Montrez threatened to do, or at least implied that he may do, and that is not bother coming back, which would be, you talk about sad, that would be sad. There's no doubt. The fingers crossed he doesn't.
Yeah. I don't want to cross that bridge until we get there, but yeah. I definitely think that, well, I can almost assure you the Sixers will be in constant contact with Montrez Harrell at the moment to try and make sure that he's okay, and as they should.
No, yeah, sure.
I have no doubt about that as well. It was interesting that this came up at a time where Larry Kesselman also had another conversation with Matt Logue that was put out on the weekend with his thoughts about expansion.
Mm.
Talk about timing. But expansion, I mean, where we are at the moment in the NBL ecosystem, it does feel like we're probably a little too light on at this particular stage in terms of teams, but you want to make sure that you bet everybody down and get them right. I think we are at that position now.
Yep.
When would you like to see the next team in? And if you were to pick, if I was going to turn it over to you, they said, Matt McQuaid, you are the man to decide the next expansion team of the NBL. Where is it and when will they come in?
Well, it's interesting, Larry, in that very wide-ranging article, and I really, hopefully, people listening to us, you've either read it or if you haven't read it, I urge you, to get onto. I think it'll either be on Code Sports or one of the News Corp websites. It was a really far-ranging interview with Larry by Matt and Mike and Mick. Sorry, Mick, but it was a fascinating read because, yeah, the expansion bit. I've often said, and our good friend Ben Knight, one of the all-time greats, he agrees that the kind of sweet spot for me for the NBL is 14 teams, and I've said that 14 teams with an 8-game, straight up playoff, quarterfinal, semifinal, championship series, best of three, best of three, best of five, or best of three, best of five, best of seven. We can
Yep.
never get down that track. I don't think we'll ever get to best of seven, but
3-3-5, I think, is realistic.
3-3-5 certainly realistic. Yeah. So you're looking at four teams, and what Larry actually says, and I this is again, he's a very smart man. We know this. And look, I've had a go at him in the previous segment, but I've also said that we owe him a massive debt, and he's being very clever with this. He's saying no stadium, no team, which I completely agree with. So where does when you talk about I can't see any movement based off the fact there's not going to be the proper the stadiums that the league wants in the next 2 years. I don't see it happening. I think it's just going to be the 10 teams in the short term, and then maybe you're looking at, I don't know, closer to sort of the 2027, 2028 seasons for a couple of teams to come in. For me, look, it wasn't mentioned in the article, but Newcastle's a really interesting one because venues New South Wales has all hasn't done it yet, but my understanding is they're just about to green light a new 12,000-ish seat stadium in that kind of Broadmeadow area. And it become a huge kind of entertainment precinct. Newcastle's a really growing town slash city. One of the largest. I think it's the largest regional city now in the country, I think, from memory. It's up there anyway. It's historically one of the great basketball towns. It's got an enormous basketball population. It's not just the greater Newcastle area, but up into kind of the Maitland Association and other associations around there, even the Central Coast, even though that's an hour away, but still you could tap into that. So they, and I know for a fact that there was a lot of work being done behind the scenes over the last year or so for Newcastle to come in and even come in at a temporary proposal to kind of upgrade the existing Newcastle Entertainment Centre, which is, it only holds, what is it, 3,500? So it would need to be upgraded to about a 5,000 to 5,500 seat facility, similar to MyState Bank Arena in Hobart. So that would be one for me. Canberra would be the other. I know there's a lot of talk about Gold Coast, and I've heard it all before. And look, they've had three goes at it, and each time it's ultimately failed. And look, you talk about the AFL. The AFL's as good as it gets, and they've poured how many millions into the Suns up for what return? aside from the television aspect of it, they just haven't had a return on investment. They've poured so much money into it because it's very much an itinerant population. It's more of it's a tourist area. It's proven to be very difficult to establish a fan base. And would they have the kind of money and wherewithal to do it? Plus, obviously, they would need another stadium there. So, and would they build one up there? And I know that the Gold Coast local government's been very keen on the idea, and I know they're pushing it hard, but I don't see it realistically. I think the two realistic ones for me are Canberra and Newcastle. or potentially a second team in New Zealand on the South Island. That would be another one, potentially. The other options that are talked about are Perth and Sydney, second teams in Perth and Sydney. There's been talk of a new stadium being built, an entertainment centre type stadium at Fox Studios, which would hold 20,000 people. So that would be the obvious site for a second Sydney team. But like in Perth, where's the burning platform for a second team in Sydney? I don't see it. Where are the people either hating where the ownership group, the obviously previous ownership group with Paul Smith, current one with Robin Denham, what dissatisfaction is there out there with the ownership, like there was back in the day with Mike Robleski and the Kings, and that's why the Razorbacks came about, a big reason why the Razorbacks came about. I just don't see it. I don't see the need for a second Sydney team. I don't. There's just not enough. Sydney fans typically just don't come out to games. If they built that thing in Moore Park, that's where the Kings should move to,
I
quite
was going to
frankly.
say, wouldn't the Kings move there?
That's the King. Yeah, that's Kings. Yeah, that's been Kings country. That's the City of Sydney Association. That historically, that's where the Kings were born, out of the City of Sydney Association. Now, I know, obviously, I don't want to go into it too much because I go on for 3 hours. But the whole thing with, when they merged with the Bankstown Association, that wasn't a merger, it was a takeover. Like, let's just call it what it was. Let's be brutally honest, it was a takeover. The Sydney Kings, historically, it's out of Alexandria, it's the City of Sydney Association, the Sydney Supersonics, and all of that. So they're more likely to move out there if that ever came to pass. And Perth, come on. I mean, the Wildcats, what, you're going to mess with that? You're going to mess with that market? No way. I just don't see it. It's, that's a different kettle of fish, the Perth Wildcats. So no. So my answer would be, provided there was the right, because obviously they have to redo the AIS Arena from a Canberra perspective. Newcastle would have to have that 12,000 seat facility, but they would be the two teams for me.
Yeah, for me, Canberra is probably the most likely, and it all comes down to what the ACT government want to do with the AIS Arena. And that has been a hot talking point down there for a while now.
100%.
You don't want to see the return of the Razorbacks at Qudos? Nostalgia for the Pigpen Mark II?
I know. And the thing is, one of the things, and again, I give Paul Smith massive credit for this. Those guys, when they took over from Harvey Lister, they did grow the brand to a level where it encompasses all of Sydney. I mean, one of the things about the Kings over the years, especially back in the old days, it was a big another reason why the Razorbacks came about, because they felt like they were being, the West was being neglected, as it were, by the Kings, because the Kings fan base was really concentrated in sort of that Northern Beaches, the Shire in Sutherland, which is south. And then obviously, as I mentioned before, kind of that inner city, Alexandria, Sydney Comets kind of area. So that historically is where the Kings have drawn their audience from. And what, Paul Smith did was expand upon that, which was great. And now, they're seen as the team of the West, and they're seen as the team of the North and the South and everywhere else. I mean, you're not going to get, back-to-back 18,000 crowds to obviously that grand final series. Two biggest crowds in NBL history back to back, unless you've captured all of Sydney, not just a part of it. So yeah, I think if they do build that second thing, and getting back to that stadium, it sounds fabulous if they can get it done. And it would be really, really, sensational. Closer to the city, I think people would go out there as well. But then, yeah, it kind of would leave Qudos empty. And maybe that's where you put a second Sydney team. But boy, you'd be taking a massive risk, in my opinion.
The spirit.
Wow, man, that's just a
Does Andrew Bogut still
deep.
have some
Yeah,
stocks in the
he
spirit?
probably does. Geez, he put some money into it. Paid some wages. I mean, he did some great things, Andrew did.
Asia, do we look at that again?
And that was another thing that Larry talks about. And look, look, you want to grow your market like that. Every business, you want to, improve your market share, and you want to grow your markets, and you want to establish yourself. It's going to take a great deal for that to happen. I think it's a long, long, long way away if it ever happens. Yeah, people will say, "Well, Singapore happened." Well, Singapore happened because the Hunter Pirates license fell down. And Bob Turner managed to convince the Singapore government that it would be viable. And of course, it wasn't. There was never any cut through because it was a bunch of Australians that, and the token Asian that were playing. So the old Singapore Slingers just never had any cut through with the Singapore community, primarily for that reason. And also the fact they thought the expats would get on board. Problem is, expats are all interested in rugby and cricket, quite frankly. That work in Singapore, so that just didn't happen. Look, we all know that the big carrot is the television money that exists in Asia, in particular China, but also other countries, including the Philippines, and we'll talk about them and my friend in a minute later on, even. But it's how do you? And they've all got their own. I mean, the Japanese B League is huge and it's growing and they spend a ton of money. The CBA is the CBA. Look, not the greatest league in the world, but as Brian Gorgian said, it's the, he went from a situation where he was worried every day about, him being paid and whether the league was going to survive and his players being paid to a situation in the CBA where he didn't have to worry about any of that. Because there was just so much money that and it was like they treat it like the NBA over there. So how do you get the NBL to get, to be a, where do you go? Is it the Philippines? Is it Singapore again? Is it Korea? Is it Japan? Is it China? What form does it take? I mean, it's yeah. I don't know. It's going to take some very, very careful thinking. And I mean, and as Larry says in this article, Asia is without a doubt part of our future. In what format? Question mark. That is what we're going to work out. So it could be anything from player development, sports diplomacy, business, preseason trips, and ultimately with one or two teams playing out of Asia. The one or two teams playing out of Asia, I mean, that could be a decade away. Certainly a good thing to establish relations. Preseason games are fine, going back and forth. Without a doubt, with whichever country is willing to, let the NBL be a part of their basketball journey.
Well, I will say this, if we do end up going down the road of a team in Asia, I would personally love to see a PBA All-Star team because you know who would be front and center of that vibe. The defending two-time fan MVP of the year, Mr. Kai Sotto, who I just popped up again. I got a whole bunch of messages this past weekend and
Yes.
wondering what on earth is going on now? Did someone discover the program from 2022? No, Mr. Sotto had a big, big fever break. He went off against New Zealand, and
Yeah.
why did you get let known about it by a lot of people? From they have some incredibly long memories over there because Mr. Soto, I mean, well, the stats don't lie. He went off against New Zealand.
He did. And they qualified, the Philippines qualified for the Asia Cup. First time they've ever beaten New Zealand. So, how you've got to be ashamed of yourselves, Tall Blacks. Come on. You can't let Kai Sotto beat you. I kid, I kid. Oh my God. You imagine how I'm getting aggregated right now.
Here we go again.
Look, is he in the NBA? I mean, my friends in the Philippines who kept telling me that, yeah, he's going to be drafted and he's going to be an NBA player. Well, he's not there yet. Still hasn't been there yet. He's in Japan in the B League. But look, you got to be fair and you got to say that he played extremely well and against a New Zealand team that was disappointing, quite frankly. But it's great. Look, the Philippines again. You ask yourself the question: when are they going to make an Olympics? They haven't done it in something like, what is it now, 60 or 70 years? And they're obviously, from a fan's perspective, we love the passion, even though it goes over the top at times. But yeah, look, you can only go on what you see, and he was very impressive, particularly against New Zealand. 19 points, filled up the stat sheet, was a dominant figure in the post. And yeah, I mean, good luck to him. Again, yeah, I mean, it's look, he's got a long way to go. If he's going to, go to that level that a lot of the crazy Filipino fans thought he should. I just hope that he understands what's required to get to the next level now, and that yeah, we'll see what happens with him.
19 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists against New Zealand. I mean, you can't help but be
Yeah, near
impressed.
triple double. Yeah, if you want to look, hey, 7 assists. It is a near triple double. So look, I never said he didn't have talent. I just said he was massively overrated and overhyped by a bunch of overexcitable Filipino fans, and I stand by that. He still is, but I'm also got to be authentic and say, hey, he played very, very well. I saw parts of it, and he was moving well. He was really a just couldn't be stopped in the low post and moved the ball exceptionally well. So, hey, what can you say? Did the job. Well done to him.
Do you think it's time to compare him to Chet Holmgren again?
Well, Victor Wembanyama, that was the other one I
Yeah.
laughed at. Yeah. No. He's a long, long, long way away from that.
Someone else who went nuts in the FIBA break, Chris Golding. Jeez, hasn't he hit a purple patch in recent times? It just went off again. I mean, he's always been brilliant when it comes to the Boomers and FIBA ball, but you got to take it for, take it for the weight of everything that he's done over the last few weeks. Said at the start of the year, Chris Golding is this a sense of, one last roar for Chris Golding? Because again, Father Time is undefeated. Not saying he's going to retire, but we see players change and we see players' abilities start to change. Can he still hit that three ball? Well, he's hitting that long shot better than he has in maybe the last 4 or 5 years at the moment. He's gone crazy hot.
I mean, to hit 19, look, people may say it was only Thailand, it was only Korea. Yeah, I get all of that. Still to knock the things down. But his look, he hits 9 threes against Thailand, but then against Korea, and they knew who he was, obviously, and they were trying to stop him. But the one thing about Chris, he's just had this ability, and a lot of the great shooters have it, of just finding enough space to score. And that's what I got out of that career. His movement off the ball was exceptional. And he had guys grabbing and holding him all the time, and he just found ways to get free. And even with all the attention paid to him, still was knocking down threes like nobody's business. And it was just a magnificent performance, and it carried us. Really, that's what we busted the game apart against the Boomers. That is, I say we, but the Boomers busted the game apart in that second period against Korea. The score was tied at 19 after one, and the Koreans were playing very well, obviously led by young Jung Lee of the Illawarra Hawks. But it was just an incredible performance, Chris. DJ Vasiljevic in that second period, even Kyle Bowen hit one from the corner, that 14-0 run, and they just blew the game apart. And that's what he's capable of doing. And when Korea kind of made their run late, there, Chris would always be there to just, okay, calm down. Here's another three for you. We're better than you guys are. Just calm down. Crowd's getting up and about and all that. And he just shut them up. It was just brilliant. Great to see. I mean, look, he's so much fun to watch when he gets going. And as I said, just a world-class shooter. I mean, he's not just one of the great shooters of this country. He's one of the great shooters of the world. He really is. And look, you might think, oh, that's hyperbole. No, I don't think it is. The guy is phenomenal. And the thing is, like, from an NBA, if you want to talk, obviously the NBA three-point line is further out than what the FIBA line is. But he rarely shoots at the FIBA line. He's always like about two or three steps back in NBA range, it seems. So, yeah, phenomenal performance by Chris.
Yeah, this on the back of, again, a game against Adelaide, he hit 3 of 5 from 3-point range, which, he selected his shot that day and still got 19 points. And then, of course, The previous occasion, he exploded 7 of 11 from deep and 46 points. Chris Goulding at the moment is going through one heck of a run, and one just wonders how that's going to continue and if that will continue when Melbourne get back underway this weekend and what that could lead to for Melbourne United this season. It's exciting. It is exciting to be talking about Chris Goulding with the shooting and not other parts of.
Yeah, what did I read somewhere on social media? He's the classic case of a guy that if you're a fan of any team other than Melbourne, you can't stand him and you hate him and you want him to fail. But when he plays for his country, you're his biggest fan. Yeah, you just are. I'm not quite at that stage. I mean, I know Chris a little bit and have done for a long time, but I've always found him, a good guy to talk to off the court. But it is true in some respects. I mean, it's like you hate the guy, but then you absolutely love him when he plays for Australia once, and he fills it up like that. It's great to watch. It really is.
Anything else take your fancy during the Asia qualifiers?
Yeah, Benny Henschel, I was so impressed with him. I thought, my goodness, this kid. Look, international basketball is a completely different animal, but I really liked how he performed. And again, I can hear the people sort of raise their eyes and roll their eyes rather and say, "Oh, it's only Korea. Don't go crazy." But international basketball is a completely different beast. And I was so impressed with the way he handled himself. I really was. I mean, look, Nick Kay with a double double against Korea was impressive as well. Mitch Norton just threw his body around like he always does, sort of as a Damian Martin light, as he's always been, which I love as well. And and look, there were some other, performances that were impressive. But yeah, Ben Henschel, really, look, I'm a big fan of his, and I have been for a few years now. And I think we're really starting to see what his potential is. And I could see him down the track be a contributor on a more regular basis for his country.
Well, let's get to the picks for round 10. We get back underway Thursday night with the matchup between Illawarra and New Zealand at the WEC. And all eyes are going to be on New Zealand's newest recruit, Matt McQuaid.
Yeah, 7'6" Taco Fall. We're assuming that he'll make his debut. Illawarra will be, I think, still without Jonah Bolden, which is a big test. First meeting between the two teams this season. Illawarra coming off a very impressive win over the Sydney Kings at the Sandpit in front of a sellout home crowd, which was really rocking. Thursdays traditionally are difficult to get the fans out, being a school night, all of that. But given how well the Hawks are playing at the moment and how Justin Tatum has got that team up and about, I think we could see a big crowd, hopefully upwards of 4,000, and they'll be loud again. Great matchups all over the place, particularly in the guards. You got, on the one hand, you got Trey Kill and Tyler Harvey. On the other hand, you got Parker Jackson Cartwright and Matt Mooney. Terrific battle between those two backcourts that will probably figure in the outcome significantly. That said, I think Illawarra's depth, and they are deep, and they're very, very talented across the board. And just the uncertain look, I think the Taco Fall story, I think it'll be, I'm not going to say it's going to be a sideshow. I think it'll be a fun story, and I think he'll be a fan favorite. I really do. How much he contributes to New Zealand being successful is another story. Freddie Gillespie was doing some really positive things for them, and this is coming from a person who was very critical of Freddie. But I had to put my hand up and say, of the last four, five, six games, he was terrific, and it looked like he was finding his feet. So take him out. There's obviously they've had a week or two to train with Taco, assuming he plays. But I just can't see them getting past Illawarra in the WEC. I think Illawarra gets this and continues their run that was started against the hated enemy, the Sydney Kings.
Yeah, I'm going with Illawarra as well. I think the Breakers could get within 6 to 8 points, but Illawarra will
Yeah.
just have too much down the stretch. And that home court as well at the WEC, they're worth about 10 points, those fans at the moment themselves. Cairns against Sydney Friday night. Cam Oliver heading back to Cairns, although It's not the old snag shed. It's not the old Bunnings warehouse that Cairns had as their home court. Remember those days, the old snag shed?
Yeah, the snag shed, yeah, absolutely.
So a bit different to the last time we saw them up there, but geez, this is must win, isn't it, for Sydney? I know round 10, all that, but they've got to beat Cairns. They've just got to.
Yeah. It's a non-negotiable. If you're going to take them seriously after how they've played up to the FIBA break, and they have been disappointing. There's no two ways about that. They admit it. They're not playing as well as they expected, or as most people expected coming into this season. So Oliver's got to step up. He has to. And he's got to be consistent. He's got to play both ends of the floor. He's got to bring maximum effort, which I think he will. I think at least for this game, and hopefully he does it for the rest of the season, but he's had another week or what has the break been? About 10 days for them. So they've had more than enough time to regroup, to get their rotations more locked in, to establish those defensive standards that Brian Goorjian is all about. So they've got a talent advantage. That said, Cairns are going to be a tough out, particularly given the fact they are getting healthier. They're getting people back. So they will give Sydney all they can handle. And if the Kings lose this game with then what's to come on the what is it? I think so, it's either Saturday or Sunday. That, dropping below 500, then you're going to have to ask some massive questions about their real candidacy this year. If they can't beat Cairns, then it's middle of the, look, I think, let's just say questions would have to be asked. So give me the Kings. I think it'll be close. I think Cairns will make them earn it. Fortey will have his guys revved up. The crowd will be all over the Kings. Let's see how they handle it up in Cairns.
I think this is the night that Sydney finally go ballistic. So I'm going with Sydney and I'm going with them comfortably. Perth and Brisbane's the Friday night nightcap. James Bateman, welcome back. 51 last time out against the Perth Wildcats, but this time we're heading back to Perth. Can he do it again? I mean, he's not going to score 51, but can he go for, let's say, if he goes for 30 plus again?
He goes for 30 plus and he gets some help. They're not without a chance, Brisbane. He's been, look, from a guy that most people thought send him home on the next plane to now a guy that's a serious contributor to what Brisbane are doing and someone that they're actually relying upon, along with, Kendrick Cook and, Perth have got a lot to prove. Particularly defensively, they just cannot allow James and then Keandre Cook and presumably Casey Prather alongside the likes of Mitch Norton and Terrell Harrison and Josh Bannon. They're starting to find their feet a little bit, Brisbane, and that would have given them enormous confidence because they really handled business in Brisbane. They really did against the Wildcats the last time out. So Wildcats will be out for revenge, but they got to be better on the boards and they got to play D because otherwise, if they allow another, Chris Golding slash James Bateman explosion, they're going to be in serious trouble. I still think they'll get the W, but I think Brisbane will make them sweat quite a lot.
It's going to be a fascinating contest. Could you imagine the scenes if Brisbane go over there and knock off the Cats? Gee whiz. Do you want to watch the world burn? South East Melbourne against Illawarra. Expect Illawarra to get the cash in this one, but this could be anything. Don't sleep on the Phoenix here.
No, and I guess you look at you can't take too much out of their first meeting at John Cain. Illawarra did get the W. It was Sammy McKinnon was the interim head coach at the time, so they were in that transition phase. Josh King will have his guys ready to go. Even more time spent with him. I think that's going to be huge. He's had more time spent learning his guys, establishing his culture, doing all of that stuff. That's where the FIBA break would help them probably more so than other clubs. So Illawarra, yeah, look, they were so, again, I go back to that Kings victory and I was just really impressed with how they took care of business. And they've still got a little bit of upside, in my opinion, as well. I think Darius Days, we haven't seen the best of him yet, as an example. So, look, the Phoenix have got a lot of guys who can put the ball in the bucket. Obviously, Matthew Hurt, Nathan Sobey, Derek Walton Jr., Angus Glover, against his hometown team, Jordan Hunter. That'll be an interesting one as well. Going up against Sam Frohling, that's a great matchup. But I can't go past Illawarra. I like him. I like them just a little bit more than I do the Phoenix at home.
Going with the Hawks, but no great confidence there. I wouldn't be entirely surprised if the Phoenix do get an upset, but you've got to go with Illawarra in this contest. Saturday evening, Adelaide against Tasmania. We don't know yet about what the final makeup of the Adelaide side will be, pending any possible appeal, but let's go with if they are as currently constituted and Davis and Montrez are out of this one, what happens?
It's really tough. I mean, we know how great Adelaide are. They're 5-0 at their venue this year. So they've been unbelievable, the Adelaide Entertainment Centre. But you take out your two primary weapons. So obviously you can talk about Dejan Vasiljevic, and there's going to be a lot on DJ coming back from the FIBA qualifiers. But losing all that productivity across the board, inside and out, with Harold, assuming that Montrez and Kendrick are out. But on the other hand, Tasmania have been so poor on the road this year, 1-6. So it's a game that Tasmania need desperately if they want to stay in the hunt for a play-in spot. And then Adelaide without, we're assuming they're without. And I'll base my pick on the fact that if Davis and Trez aren't playing, I like Tasmania. I think they'll play good enough defense for an undermanned Adelaide, and I think they'll give them their first loss at the Entertainment Centre this year.
That's a fair shout. I think that Adelaide, even with those two outs, might galvanize themselves enough. And with that raucous, rabid Adelaide home crowd, it might be enough to lift them over the line in this one. I'm going with Adelaide regardless, just based on that bit of a siege mentality. And also the fact it's the first game out of the FIBA break, first game back after everything that took place. I think that the crowd might be the difference in this one. So I'm going with Adelaide to get the job done there. Melbourne and Sydney on Sunday. You have to go Melbourne regardless. But I mean, you got to go with Melbourne. It should be a big clash, but I don't know. I picked at the start of the season to be the championship series.
Yeah, which
I think one half's living up to the billing, that's for sure.
yeah, that's right. Certainly not now. I don't think many people would be picking that for a championship series run. Yeah, look, the last time they played, I thought the Kings played well. And I think Cameron Oliver had a big game, which he'll need to have again against this relentless Melbourne unit. Look, Chris Golden comes back from the FIBA qualifiers. What shape will he? Presumably be in great shape the way he's shooting the ball. So all he needs to do is find ways to knock down threes, and they'll be fine. Yeah, look, it's hard to go past Melbourne, isn't it? Based off what we saw pre the FIBA break of where Sydney's at. Now, as I said, they did go hard against Melbourne, and they took it to them and had their chances in that game at John Cain the last time they were there. But obviously Jack White hits the two threes, and it was more than that though. I just felt like once it got to that point, the way the Kings are at the moment, I just felt like Melbourne were just more professional in the way they were going about it. They were just better drilled in terms of rotations and in terms of their defensive identity. Even though, let's be fair, the Kings have been either one of or one of the top two defensive teams rather in the league pretty much all year. So they have the capability to slow Melbourne down and disrupt what they do offensively. But at that building, you just at the moment, in terms of, Melbourne being the outright championship favourites, and I think deservedly so, I just find it very, very difficult to die. I hate doing it and I'll get in trouble for it. I don't care. You got to be authentic, obviously, and I've said that a million times. I just think you've got to give it to Melbourne, and I think they'll get the job done.
Yeah, I think
I hope I'm wrong.
Melbourne win this by about 10 points.
Yeah.
The game that I'm really looking forward to this weekend, I think it's the game of the weekend for one particular reason. Perth and New Zealand on Sunday.
Yep.
Bryce Cotton against
Yeah.
PJC. Give
Mouth-watering.
me all of that.
Yep. No question about it. And it's yeah. I mean, PJC and they've been so close, really, connected at the hip almost, in terms of the production they've put up, although Bryce is obviously, a little bit not down, but not what we expect of him, as brilliant as he's been. PJC just finds ways to score and get his teammates involved. He's just brilliant. They won't defend each other. I can't imagine they'll defend each other. I think it'll probably Ben Henschel will probably be tasked with that initially, on that side of the ball. It'll be interesting to see who Bryce's matchup will be. So, but yeah, it's going to be a fascinating battle. And Perth, look, they're two home games, and they've got to really win. But they're 6-7, so they need to get above 500. They need to stay in the race for obviously the play-in tournament, because we talked about this. Brisbane, the Phoenix, and Tasmania—they're coming, and they're not that. They're only look. Brisbane's got one fewer loss than Perth. They just haven't played as many games. So these two games are almost must wins, even at this stage of the season for the Wildcats. I'm going to say Perth without too much conviction.
This is hard. This is hard. You in previous days would have gone Perth at home automatically, but RAC Arena has not been RAC Arena for a couple of years. It's not been the same home court advantage for Perth. It's still one of the top home court advantages in the league, but it's not automatic as it used to be. I can see New Zealand going there and getting this one.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I'm
Yeah.
going to go New Zealand. I'm going to go New
You're
Zealand.
going to go to New
I know
Zealand?
that I've
Yeah.
done this a few times this season and I've tripped up, but Parker Jackson Cartwright in that building, I just think of times where he's been on the road. I think of Melbourne recently. I think back to Sydney in the playoffs last year. This one's a pivotal game. It's kind of like a pathway game for both of these sides. You choose your path. I think this is one that he's going to go off for a monster and drag New Zealand over the line in an absolute epic, one of the games of the season.
I mean, it's such a brutal double for New Zealand. I mean, luckily they get a couple of days before they head before they play the Wildcats in that Sunday game, because they've got the Thursday night game, so that helps. But I mean, imagine if they could get both games, and talk about validating your championship credentials. Now they then they're chasing Melbourne. They've only played the 10 games. They get the two this week. So, with a possibility to go to 9-3, I don't think they will. But if they did, my goodness, that it kind of changes the narrative around them this season.
Fork in the road game, I think, for both. And anyone that wants to use the excuse for New Zealand, well, they'll be fatigued after the first game. Well, look at what happened when they went to Melbourne.
Yeah,
They
destroyed them.
whipped them to pieces. So we know that they can do it. We
Yep.
know they can hit the short turnarounds on the road. I'm going with New Zealand. AJC to beat Bryce Cotton, but there will be a couple of more meetings. I wouldn't be shocked if they find a way to meet in the postseason, to be honest. I don't know if that's hope more than anything else, but I'd love to see Bryce against PJC in the postseason.
Yeah, 100%.
So that's this weekend, round 10. Next week is Heritage Round, and I'm really looking forward to that, the Heritage Round for the NBL. But before we sign off on this one, we've got to talk about the WNBL because new ownership for the WNBL. And this came, of course, last week, but it came in a little bit too late before we were able to truly get into the meat of the matter. But New ownership for the WNBL. It's going to be a combination of the LK Group and the Wollemi Capital Group. It's hard not to be excited about what this could lead to for not just the WNBL, but women's basketball in this country as well. And then it goes all the way up to our Opals, of course, who long been the pride of Australian basketball when it comes to the international ranks. I know that we've seen the Boomers enter a highly successful period, the most successful period from an Olympic perspective in recent times. But geez, this is hard not to get excited about it, because what it also does is it brings everybody back together and everyone pulling in the same direction.
Yeah, it's kind of the old one basketball concept that Basketball Australia tried to implement years and years ago when they were running the NBL, and it failed miserably, unfortunately. But you've certainly got the right people involved. I mean, Larry Kestelman, we've talked about him at length. Robin Denham, who runs the Wollemi Capital Group, chairperson of Tesla, and has had an extraordinary career, is worth well in excess of $1 billion. So obviously an incredibly well-regarded, intelligent, and passionate advocate of basketball and women's basketball in particular. It's just phenomenal. It really, I think the importance of this can't be understated, because as I've said for many years, you talked about the Opals, right? And the Opals primarily were born of the WNBL. And you look at who the WNBL has produced over, decades. You're talking about some of the greatest, not only in this country, but of any country. The obvious one, Lauren Jackson, that stands alone, but there are so many others. Hall of Famer Michelle Timms, one of the great point guards that women's basketball has ever produced globally, let alone Australia. Robin Ma, was sort of the Lauren Jackson before Lauren Jackson happened. You could go on and on. Beck Allen, I mean, look, there's just so many of them that are these great, and we're seeing even now some, the Ezzie Magbegors, easy for me to say, and others in that age group that are starting to make their mark in the WNBA and globally. And it's always drive me nuts that, what the Opal, how many medals, and they were world champions, and they've been Olympic silver medalists multiple times, and they've been such unbelievable servants of basketball in this country, the Opals. But have they ever gotten any kind of notoriety or any kind of, like the Matildas had as an obvious example? You want to talk about sort of where the Matildas were and in the World Cup. And granted, it was held in this country and all of that. But, they didn't win a medal at the end of the day. And yet these girls in the Opals have just been carrying the flag for Australian basketball forever. And as part of that, the WNBL as a league, I've always said, is a world-class league, but it has suffered just beyond belief with horrific management throughout the years. They've never, ever had the kind of cut through to the Australian sporting public that they deserved, based on how great the actual talent was in this country and how impressive a competition the league has been. And I'm talking about the on-court stuff, not the off-court stuff, obviously. But this can change everything. It really can. And what you start talking about, we mentioned about expansion. Then, once, look, it's going to take a long time. I get it. But I'm very confident in these people manage. I for the first time in forever, I'm extremely, maybe since Mike Wrubleski got involved and brought the Flames over to the Kings, and, and that changed life for women's basketball in that era of the 90s. When you had always double headers at the Sydney Entertainment Centre, you'd get people would show up for the WNBL game. There'd be like 6,000, 7,000 before the Kings would play. And people felt they were getting two great games for the price of one. So I'd like to see that established more, if possible, to sort of get them all under the umbrella. We talked about the event in Perth, where it was the WNBL preseason tournament, but it was sort of an afterthought. So Hoops Fest in Perth can go to yet another level. And I'm saying in Perth because I think it deserves to stay there. But yeah, all these things that you know, the financial aspect of it, the promotional aspect through Larry, and just the business practices that they'll bring to bear for the competition, where the girls are paid more commensurate with their skill and with their talent, rather than being treated as second-class citizens as they have been. All of that is just really positive. And then down the track, you know, hopefully we'll see more than the eight teams, see a team back in Melbourne, for example, and teams elsewhere. So than the eight teams that we currently have. So yeah, I think it's fantastic. And I think we'll see the benefits of it in 2 to 3 years' time and from there on in.
Yeah, exciting times, I think, for women's basketball and the WNBL now being in new hands, in safe hands. I think we can all agree for the first time in, go insert time here. Like you said, you go back to previous iterations of it. It just hasn't had the cut through that it should. There's no question now it's going to be promoted, I think, the right way.
Yeah. And manage, more importantly, manage the right way.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, look, Larry and Robin, I mean, they've got that track record, you know, particularly Larry with the NBL, but Robin from a business perspective, and certainly, you know, the work she's done with the Sydney Flames. Now, look, they're not playing great at the moment, but that's fine. I mean, it's early days, but yeah, they'll improve, I'm sure. And so, yeah. And look, anything that gives the game more notoriety, more eyeballs, gets people excited. And as I said, that's great. And as I said, I think the WNBL has been a world-class league that's been neglected for far too long. And it's great to see that things will be on the improve from next year moving forward.
So that's us for this week. Next week, I'm hopeful that it's just going to be pure basketball talk from minute one to the last, because that's what we want. And let's hope it's a fantastic weekend of basketball. Let's get back to the on-court action, and hopefully that will be the headline coming out of round 10. Thanks so much for your company for this week for the roundtable. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye for now.